Welcome, rock stars from Rockland, USA studios in Washington, D.C. This is Rock on the Money. Time to talk about saving, investing, and protecting all of those hard-earned monies. We're here to give you ideas, answer your questions, and keep you updated on the path to retirement and financial freedom without any fees or commissions. Kind of what we do here. I'm Craig with Amanda, your financial coaches, and we're so thankful that you've joined us. You can call us 24 hours a day, 989-888-ROCK. 989-888-7625. Leave a voicemail, text us with your questions or comments, and we'll answer them on the show. And if you're too shy for all that, you can always email us to podcast@rocklandusa.com. Amanda, welcome aboard. Craig. How you doing?
Great.
No updates?
None come to mind. How about you? You have an update for us?
No, but we have a packed show that involves a lot of the listeners. So how about we just dive right into this thing?
Let's dive into that.
I love it. Yeah. All right. So what do we got?
We've got a couple of voicemail questions.
Yes.
Super exciting. Yes. Which will be entered into our March drawing. We've got a social media questions, plural. And then our topic today is a review on the baby steps that we just finished our series on last episode and how to move forward now that you have that knowledge. And then today's Savvy Savings segment is going to be budgeting basics for variable incomes.
Wow. This is a good one. Mm-hmm. I love it. All right, everybody, let's get to the voicemails. And to remind you, we're giving away a gift card once a month if we use your question by calling 989-888-ROCK, 989-888-7625. If we use your question on the show, you're entered into a monthly drawing, Amanda, for a gift card to Amazon or Walmart.
So can I call and leave a question?
No.
Okay.
But we got two voicemails that we're going to play on this show.
All right.
We got a couple stacking up, so we might be doing we might end up doing a whole show of voicemails eventually, which okay. We can do that every now and then.
Yeah,
makes our job a lot easier. If we just had to take phone calls and just answer, we would have to do no show prep.
Now I understand why that's Dave Ramsey's model.
Yeah. He just sits down, takes phone calls, and he says, well, do the baby steps. How hard is that?
He gets to just waltz into his studio. Whereas you and I are slaving away at putting together notes days in advance.
All right. Here's our first voicemail. I believe we have Loretta from Maryland.
Hi, my name is Loretta. I am having a question about my contribution to my 401k. I was told I should have it at least at 17.5%. I'd love to hear from somebody to help me out with that.
Where do you think she came up with this weird number of 17.5%?
I have no idea.
That's what confuses me about the question. Do you think there's a company match mixed in with that or something? Or
could
it's
be.
It's just a weird number.
It also could be the maximum based on her income level.
Oh, okay.
Hmm. Yeah, so we don't have quite enough information there, so we'll have to make some assumptions.
Yeah.
But remember, 401k contributions also max out eventually. Yeah. So that might be her precise percentage amount that would get her to that max.
Oh, look at you, Brainiac. So the max would be
my guess.
If she's under 50, it's $19,500 for this year, which is, I don't know what year you guys are listening to this, because trust me, these podcasts live infinite. So in 2020, it's $19,500. And then, of course, if you're over 50, you can do a catch up. So.
Right. So that would be my guess, is that she's looking at a percentage of her income that would get her to that max this year.
Right. Once again, we're going to go back to the baby steps on this. If you've done your emergency fund, your initial, you've paid off your debt, you've now paid off all your consumer debt, we're up to baby step four, which is fund at least 15%, which this obviously makes it. Then we go on and we start looking at paying off our mortgage and funding 529s for the kids and that sort of thing. So is what we want to do is we want to max out our 401k IRA at some point. So whatever it takes to get there, like you're saying, Amanda, if this is the number, you know, like you said, we don't have all the information on this.
Mm-hmm.
So
the other thing I want to say, Craig, about these 401k limits is that there's also some rules that come into play if you're considered what's called a highly compensated employee. So for 2020, if your compensation is greater than $130,000 a year, or you own more than 5% interest in the business sponsoring your plan during any point in the year, then you would be considered a highly compensated individual. And then, you know, you have to look at some contribution limits there that are different.
And you know what? We actually have a listener. She's a medical student over here in Baltimore. I think Johns Hopkins. She emailed me that same question. She didn't understand what that was. And she and because she's a medical student, they still make money as a resident or whatever. And she fell into that category. So had to find different ways to deal with her account. Yeah, she hit the limits. So her rules were different than everybody else.
Yeah, so it's actually kind of complicated. Yeah. And for highly compensated individuals, it can't be more than 2% higher than the average contributions made by non-highly compensated employees of the same business. So you have to have some help there. I mean, you're not going to know what that is. You'll have to have some information from your HR department and work with your tax advisor. But I did want to mention that. I'm not sure if we've mentioned it in the past before, and just wanted to put that out there since we have talked about limits before. I don't want people running into problems.
No, that's perfect, because we actually do have listeners that fall into that, what you just said, and I've helped out two of them. And I don't want to use her name, but shout out to her, because she keeps sending me questions. She's doing very well in school, and really proud of what she's doing. There's a whole backstory to how she got there and everything. So really proud of her. Moving on to the next voicemail. We got a twofer.
Okay.
Hey, guys. Alex. Just wanted to call and ask what your advice was for where do I put emergency fund money? Is that a high yield savings, or is that a money market, or do you keep a certain amount of cash? Thanks.
There you go, Amanda. This is an easy one for you. I didn't say, I didn't mean it that way. You can, I'll find you a more complicated one, but.
No, I thought because you knew what I was going to say.
I know exactly what you're going to say. So I figured you've talked about this a lot. So I just wanted to give it to you.
Well, I was originally going to say it depends, but.
there you go. Lawyer.
So for me, it would depend on a couple of things. I would put my $1,000 baby emergency fund either as cash on hand or in something that is super liquid, like I could just go to the ATM and get it out.
Yes.
The rest of it I would put into a high yield savings account, or maybe I would consider a money market account. Honestly, I don't think money market accounts are worth the hassle. They usually don't yield much more than today's high yield savings, so I usually just stick with those. And there's some really good ones that are available online, like we've talked about Ally before, Marcus by Goldman Sachs, which is what I use, and there's a number of others out there as well.
And they're popping up every day. They're really competing against the banks.
Yeah, and you know what I noticed is that when one of them changes their interest rate, they all follow pretty quickly. So they're all pretty much the same interest rate.
The competition in the financial world right now is benefiting us. We just got to we got to be a little cautious about what they're doing, because they always will win. So we got to be a little cautious about using some of these products. That's all.
Speaking of competition, did you see that Morgan Stanley is buying E-Trade?
Yes, because I still have an E-Trade account.
Now you're going to have a Morgan Stanley account.
I'm not proud of having an E-Trade account because it's not a great trading platform. When I feel like day trading, because I used to do it, I do have some money in there, and I literally, I know it sounds crazy, I treat it like a video game.
Yeah.
70% of people that day trade lose money. So I have this little bit of play money in there, and I go in there with the other day traders. We get in a chat room, and it's fun for about 45 minutes, because that's all day trading at last. It starts at 9:30 in the morning. And about 10:15, you're done. I know that sounds crazy, everybody. I do not recommend anybody doing day trading.
Yeah.
I will talk about what really goes on with day trading. But please don't buy the course. Don't buy the books. Don't do it. Yeah. If you're baby step seven and you have a little bit of money, you want to play. It's like betting on racehorses. It literally is.
Yeah. But you just have to, it's entertainment money. So you're likely going to lose it.
you're competing against algorithms and computers these days and some other issues, which I'll get into another thing. It's kind of scammy with these day trading course teachers, what they do. And I'll talk about that in a different episode. But anyway.
So would you do anything different for Alex or
no,
do you agree?
No. I love all the answers you had. I love it.
All right.
I got a social media question for you.
Okay.
Hey, can I point out one thing about us?
Sure.
We're actually very hypocritical, and I'm going to come clean with everybody.
Okay.
I'm catching you off guard. We don't have notes for this, people. You know, we talk about never going into debt whatsoever, but this show is in debt.
What?
Well, no. You know, we make no money doing this.
Yeah.
We're buying gift cards for people. I bought you a microphone. You know, you have to host all the podcasts. There's a lot of money and time and effort goes into this. So hopefully, we're hoping that we will be ad supported in the future, but we're not going to charge you guys for this stuff. But isn't it kind of weird that
let's not say never, Craig.
I know. But isn't it hypocritical that we tell people never go into debt and we're sitting here going into debt with this show?
Well, I'm not going into debt.
No, good point. You win. Yeah, I'm the one, but that's okay. I'm enjoying it. I'm having a lot of fun. It's a lot of work, but.
So again, it's like your day trading hobby where you're just having fun.
On to the question. It's a lot of questions I'm juggling. I know I'm missing a few too.
Well, and that's why I say you're going to have to start setting some boundaries if you're going to be giving it away for free.
I'm going to start turning on my Google Assistant and have it answer the questions. Hopefully it gives the right answer. I think I can automate this somehow. I'm going to work on that. Hey, social media question for Amanda.
Okay.
So I have heard that you can use your 401k as a down payment on a house or pay medical bills or student loans. Is there any truth to that? Are you liable to pay it back? Or do you just get taxed and start over? Why are you laughing?
I'm laughing because the word is a loan. So yes, you have to pay it back.
Well, I think they've been told that I can just take the money out and not pay it back.
Well, okay.
But the IRS does not really like that.
Yeah,
so anyway,
go
ahead.
The IRS does not like that.
Yeah. Do you want to tackle this? You want me to talk about that?
Well, I think we can tackle this one together.
Go ahead.
So yes, you can take a loan on your 401k for really a number of reasons or no reason at all. You do have to pay it back or you're going to be subject to penalties and, you know, taxes and penalties. Again, you're taking out one loan to create a second loan. So I don't think I would structure it like that. To me, that sounds more like a Ponzi scheme. Craig, thoughts?
I have people contact me a lot about using their 401k to pay off debt. And I will never, you will never find me approve or give you advice to take money out unless you have to be like in the late stages of foreclosure, like they're getting ready to come down and kick you out, throw your stuff at the curb. You're kicking the can down the street. Never touch that 401k. You're damaging your future when you do that.
Yeah, I hate it. I know people who have done this and it drives me bonkers.
And I know there's a lot of people in this that listen to us, that are in our Facebook group, that take loans out from their 401k. It sounds like a good deal. I've sat in presentations.
Yeah, no, I've heard the argument. Oh, I'm just borrowing for myself. So whatever money I have to pay back, it's going back to me. Well, yeah, but there's an opportunity cost there as well. It means during that time period, you're also not making any money. And last year, the S&P was up 30%. Are you paying yourself a 30% interest rate? I don't think so.
Whoa, that was a little bit of a soapbox there. No, I get just as irritated. And like where I used to work in the fire department, they would do the presentation. I remember it. They make it sound like it's a great benefit. And they only charge you 1% for the loan on top of what you're losing. But they don't mention that part.
Right.
So a lot of people do it like, oh, I have money right there. I just borrow my money.
So if you have some kind of unexpected thing, like, you know, a cancer treatment or something that comes up, of course, there are some circumstances that might justify it. And 1% is certainly better than going to like a payday lender.
Right.
If you're one of those one of three people that we talked about last episode who's not making it paycheck to paycheck, you know, one of these days we should talk about payday lenders, Craig.
Oh.
But yeah, 1% is better, but it means you're also losing out on, you know, 12 to 30% in gains.
Right. And of
so
course,
it's really
we already have
you like 13 to 31%.
And hopefully you're going through your 3 to 6 months emergency fund before you do that. This is like a last resort thing. And you should have the proper insurance. We'll talk about different insurances as well.
I mean, there's so many problems with this question. And not to pick on whoever asked the question,
exactly.
I'm really glad that they did, because there's a lot of things to talk about here. So if you are having to borrow to make a down payment on a house, you're not ready for a house.
Exactly. You know what? I believe that's actually what I told him. That was the first answer. I said, well, if you have to borrow money for 401k, don't buy the house. You don't have the money for it yet. Medical bills and student loans, you need to work those off. You need to get a bigger shovel, get another job, work more hours, whatever it takes. Do not touch 401k. At this level, you're not protecting the four walls of your house.
Yeah. So the short answer is yes, you can use your 401k as a loan. Should you is the right question. And the answer to that is no.
Absolutely not. And I will haunt your dreams if you do it.
It sounds kind of stalkerish.
I know, but at least they LOL me back. Okay. If you do take the money out and you don't pay it back, it's equal to a 40% loan, by the way.
Yeah.
Because you got the 10% IRS tax on top of the regular income tax. Mm-hmm. It's just 40% loan. That's like going to a payday lender.
Yeah.
Or getting whole life, which is a whole other thing. You ready for another social media question? You see how I did that? You want another social media question?
Yes.
I just talked to my financial advisor. Last year, I was up 17% after fees. And since 2016, I've averaged 7% after fees. In your opinion, is this good? He charges 1% per year.
Okay.
I'm trying to calm down.
Because I'm going to let you answer this.
There's three topics that really fire me up and I turn into the Hulk. They are whole life,
advisors.
Whole life, annuities and advisors. I will speak calmly, Amanda. How about I'll take a first stab calmly. And if I get out of control, you can take over.
Well, maybe I will start.
Please do.
Okay. So I would have a couple of questions for this individual. One, why are you using a financial advisor?
There's that.
Yeah. I mean, we've talked repeatedly about the fact that, you know, unless you have such a complex wealth portfolio, it's highly unlikely that you need a financial advisor. You could go ahead and put your funds into a simple S&P index fund, an ETF, and last year you would have made 30% instead of 17%, and at fee rate of less than 1%, like a fraction of 1%. So this is a very, very expensive financial advisor you're using. I don't think it's good. 7% since 2016 to me seems almost as if you're losing money. Craig, since 2016, what's been the gains?
I'm looking it up right now. Hold on.
Yeah, this one makes me really sad because there's so much money that's been lost.
So since I just pulled up a quick chart, okay? Mm-hmm. Since 2016, I just went to January till now, looking at the graph, it says 76.9%. So
up.
So that's 3 years?
Maybe four.
Four? Yeah. Oh, yeah, four.
Four.
And you're the blonde.
Yeah.
So four into 76.
I'm pretty sure it's four. Yeah.
That's a little bit higher than 7% per year.
Yeah, I get
that's 19%. A lot higher. You could have made double.
So, more than double. Yeah, almost triple.
Yeah, there you go.
Especially once you take the fee into consideration. Yeah.
And like you said, Amanda, I think some people were shocked that I actually recommended to an advisor to somebody in the group the other day. They're like, wait a minute, I thought he was against that. They were older, they had money, and now they're trying to prepare for retirement. But it, like you said, it's a wealth strategy to protect the money in retirement, get advice, get everything all situated. But when you're full board, you're younger, unless you're within 10 years of retiring, you should be full board stock market going forward. The advisors, I have no problem paying for an advisor whatsoever. I will pay them the 1%, but they got to beat the index. If they cannot do that consistently, on without lying and using fake math that we've talked about before, I'm not paying you 1%. There's no way.
And we've also talked about before, if you're going to go to a financial advisor, find a flat fee one, not one that's going to make a commission off of your gain.
And that would be what we've always recommended. If you want to get a financial advisor, and I highly recommend most people double check everything we've said, everything you've heard out there. Pay a fee-only advisor that sells nothing and does not refer you to somebody else. That means you're only paying for their thoughts. They look at everything from your insurance, your income, your debts, and everything like that, and they give you a plan of what you should be investing in and so on. That way, they have no skin in the game other than giving you advice, just like you would a lawyer. You pay them a fee, they tell you what you should do, you tell them your story, and you move on. Garrett Planning Network is a place that all those that are in that network, they have to sign and renew a fiduciary responsibility and sign a contract that they will not refer you to someone else, or they have the ability to sell you anything. That is what Consumer Reports advises. That's what a lot of other places say you should go to. So on our website, we actually have an article of that. I'll put it in the show notes to link it up. But there's two places you can go. GarrettPlanningNetwork.com is one place you can just put your zip code in. Advisors come up, and they're supposed to be fee only, and they cannot sell you anything or refer you. It may cost you a couple hundred dollars, but that's the price to pay for them not getting kickbacks somewhere else.
All right. What's next?
I need to calm down. I'm literally sweating. All right, everybody, we're going to just do a quick review of the baby steps. We just went over, Amanda, the last seven episodes, every baby step in detail. 1, 2, 3, all the way up through 7. So let's just do a quick review of them, and let's talk about moving forward, what we're going to do, what you should be doing as well.
All right.
I will go over the baby steps. I'm going to give you a break because you have Savvy Savings coming up.
Okay.
All right. So baby step one, if you're just starting out and you don't have an emergency fund, first we're going to do our $1,000 emergency fund. If you make $25,000 or less, you only should have $500 in there, because that could be hard to build up. Right, Amanda?
The baby emergency fund.
I like how you call it that. The baby emergency fund. Baby step two is the one that could take you up to 2 years to handle. Baby step two is the one where we're going to pay off all of our consumer debt. Consumer debt is everything but the mortgage. Student loans, medical, credit card, cars, boats, motorcycles, campers. All that crap that you have in your house that you went and charged, we got to pay that off. Or, Amanda, sell it off. The rule with cars and trucks, if you can't pay it off in 2 years, Amanda,
sell it.
Time to sell it. And this is a topic people get hung up on, but got to sell it. You just got to have to step down to hoopty level, or just have to lower your expectations for a while. You can't afford it. The total value of your vehicles cannot exceed 50% of your annual income. That's not a pass to buy those vehicles. That's just the max when you know you have too much vehicle. So we're going to pay off all of that, Amanda. And in this process that we're doing all this, we've stopped contributing to the 401k. Mm-hmm. We're only paying minimums on everything. And then we're going to pay off our lowest balance, not interest rate, which everyone wants to do. Lowest balance to the highest balance. And the reason for this, Amanda, is psychological. We get small wins and we start feeling good. And then as we pay them off, we're paying more into the bigger balances and so on. Because if you started with a bigger balance, Amanda, you get frustrated. It's like trying to lose weight. You're not seeing any results. The balance isn't moving because you don't have the money to throw at it. But if you start small, you end up with more money to throw at the bigger balance at the end. It's a psychological Craig, thing.
I think I said the opposite last episode.
Ooh.
Yeah, I got it reversed last time. So hopefully people are tuning in again.
Don't worry about it. Like I've posted in the Facebook group, this is 80% psychological, 20% mechanical. That is personal finance. All right, so moving on to baby step three. Now we're going to fully fund the emergency fund. And this one's not fun. Nobody just likes dumping money into a savings account. It's like, well, I'm not getting anywhere here. Why am I just dumping money in there? Why am I not building up my 401k? Why am I not paying off my mortgage? We need to have a safety net to protect you because life happens. Who's that Allstate guy? Mayhem.
Oh, I was thinking of Jake from State Farm.
No, I'm talking about Mayhem. Mayhem.
Yeah, Mayhem. Love him.
Life happens. That's what you're trying to protect from. If you have that, it takes care of all the other issues, okay? Then we go on to baby step four, minimum 15% in your 401k, IRA, retirement funds. And we do not, this is a personal view, we do not include in the 15% the company match. That's icing on the cake. Do you agree with that? It's okay not to.
I do.
Oh, I like that. Baby step five. If you have kids, plan on having kids. If you unintentionally had twins.
Yeah.
We're going to keep using that, by the way. I love that. Yeah. If you unintentionally had twins, it's time to start saving for the education with a 529. Or,
oh my goodness. Yeah. What? Double education.
Could you imagine? But if you start early, it really does make it a lot easier.
Yeah. You know, yeah. All right. Well, I don't know how I feel about the saving for kids college, but carry on.
Oh, yeah. That is kind of a loaded topic. Baby step six, paying off your mortgage. And four, five, and six we do simultaneously, but in that order, if you can only do one at a time.
Yeah. Then I guess that's where I disagree with Dave is I think it's much more important to take care of yourself first and then your kids. So if you still have a mortgage, that should be more of a priority than paying off than putting money away for your kids.
I will agree with you on that as well, because I don't believe everyone needs to go to college. I don't have a degree, Amanda.
And I turned out pretty well. I don't think that everyone needs to count on their parents to pay for it.
Yeah, absolutely. Anyway. So baby step six, we pay off the mortgage, and then we're baby step seven, where we go back to four and start maxing out our retirement accounts. We can back off a little because we've made it and we know we're going to be good. We're going to be okay. And then we give generously as well.
Got it.
So in the future, we're going to start talking about various aspects of this and related back. You're going to always hear us talk about the baby steps. When you guys ask us questions, pretty much we're going to refer back to the baby steps, just like pretty much we'll answer a lot of your questions. A lot of people like to jump around and do ish. We're not going to recommend ish. We're trying to give you a plan, something that you can believe in, because it has worked for millions of people. So that's what we're going to do. Okay.
All right.
All right. So how about we take a break and then we're getting into savvy savings and we're bringing back budgeting basics again.
All right.
What's the topic with budgeting basics this week?
Today, we're going to talk about budgeting for variable incomes.
Ooh, this is me. I've never had a steady income in my life. All might have been variable. I can't wait to hear about this. This is going to be up my alley. All right, everybody, we're going to be right back after this. You're listening to Rock on the Money with Craig and Amanda. To Rock on the Money. Don't forget, we're taking your voicemails so you can win some cash. Well, it's not cash, is it?
It's a gift card. Electronic cash-ish.
Cash-ish. If you record a voicemail on our hotline, we never use that term, our hotline, 989-888-ROCK, 989-888-7625. If we use your question on the show, you are entered into our monthly drawing for a gift card to Walmart or Amazon, and it's $50. $50.
Pretty cool.
You can buy gummy bear. What would you buy on Amazon if you had $50 right now?
probably books. Because I'm so fun.
Yep, just like your Instagram.
Yes.
I'm just kidding. I don't even know why I'd buy right now.
Yeah, what would you buy?
I don't know. I'm too busy to use anything.
I mean, yeah. I just bought my rollerblade, so that's what I would have used it on.
Not for $50.
No, but it would have gone.
It would have helped, though.
Mm-hmm. Hey. You know, it's the first time I bought rollerblades. Well, first time I've ever bought new rollerblades, one, which I was pretty excited about.
Yeah.
Because I've always just gotten used ones off of eBay. But even so, the last time I'd bought a pair off of eBay was in like 2007.
Oh, man, that's old school.
Yeah. So, yeah, I made them last and they got good use. And the bearings are still good. Just the wheels are bad and there's some things going on, but I got an upgrade. Brand new rollerblades. Treat yourself.
Yes. I still use eBay. I still use them. All right. What do we got for Savvy Savings?
So today's topic is budgeting for variable incomes. So this question came out of our Facebook group, and I think it's really important, especially for a number of our listeners who are coming from an industry that doesn't have necessarily a completely predictable pay schedule every month. So remember, in a couple episodes ago, we started talking about budgeting, and the first thing to identify is where you're at. So what your monthly income is and then what your monthly expenses are. So for people, though, who have a less predictable income, then that becomes more challenging. So I get paid twice a month. My husband gets paid twice a month. We're both on the twice a month schedule. And we know like almost to a penny how much is going to be in each check because, you know, when you're on salary, that's how it goes. You get paid a certain amount a year and then split evenly into 26 checks. Mm-hmm. And now if you're in an industry where you could have variable hours, you're paid hourly, and you could have different hours, or you might have some overtime, or you get paid on commission, for example, or you pick up certain shifts that change your hours paycheck to paycheck, then it becomes more challenging and you can't just do a straight budget or you're going to run into problems day one. So to budget for variable incomes, you're still going to start with your what I'm going to call bare bones budget. And you're still going to look at what your income is and your expenses are, because again, we talked about budgeting is really easy. Mm-hmm. Income versus expenses. it's the execution that's hard.
Yes. So
income, you're going to look at what was your lowest monthly income last year and use that as your baseline. And then when you look at your expenses, you're going to figure out, well, what are your minimum bills each month? And then beyond the minimums, you would want to list in order of priority the other items. And in each case, you're going to make sure that there is a zero sum between the income from your lowest month versus your expenses. And just like in our standard budgeting, if you have a discrepancy there, you need to address that on budgeting. So if you have too many expenses, you're going to need to cut back on expenses. If you have more income than expenses, that's great. Then you need to direct where that surplus is going to go. Is it going to retirement or some other fund or, you know, one of the other baby steps? Hmm. So once you've figured that out, after you've sat down and looked at your variable income, you have a couple of different options. And I'm going to talk about a couple of good plans and then the best plan. Ooh. I don't know, Craig, do you have a preference which order we go in?
No, versus best? No. Oh, yeah. I always liked going for the candy first, though.
Okay. So let's talk about
the best one.
Yeah. The best plan.
Let me hear the best first.
The best, and this is just purely my opinion, would be to put all of your pay into a savings account and pay yourself a steady salary into your checking account each month from that savings account. So that way you're cheating the system and you're actually giving yourself a predictable and steady income.
Hmm.
Makes sense?
Yeah.
So you can also make this whatever payday schedule works best for you and your personality. So if you work well with it twice a month, that's you can do it that way. Or if you prefer getting paid every 2 weeks, you could do a payday every 2 weeks from your savings account. If you want to have a payday every week, you could do that as well. You just have to be disciplined and know, and your budgeting has to be centered around those paydays.
This is assuming you're not paycheck to paycheck.
Well, you have to get a little bit beyond paycheck to paycheck to make that work. That's right. So this would be something you could do once you have your emergency fund fully funded. I mean, you basically just need to be 1 or 2 months in surplus of your emergency fund. So that's the best plan, because then you're actually giving yourself a steady salary and you can go back to budgeting as if you had a steady salary and not a variable income. Make sense?
I'm kind of ish. I'm best plan ish. But okay. I don't know if you're going to talk about what I do in a future one. Maybe I'm not doing it good enough or best.
Okay. Well, so that, again, that's just my opinion that that's the best plan, only because I think that steady salaries are easier to budget.
Oh, okay. Because I dump all my money into savings. Uh-huh. And then as I have to pay bills, I move the money into checking to cover the electronic payments.
Okay.
But so I keep all the money in savings.
That might work off of our next suggestion.
I'm not best.
So I think this is a good plan. This would be to live on last month's income. So if you're budgeting, so if you live off of last month's income, then you have 1 month of income set aside, but you still do the budget like you just said, Craig, where you have, like, as soon as things come due, then you're paying them. You're budgeting then off of real numbers and not a projection for the month.
Wow. I got you.
So you're not trying to project what your bills are. You know what they are already, and you're just paying them off of last month's income.
Well, the problem is I don't have a lot of bills anymore.
It doesn't sound like a problem.
Okay, so hopefully I'm not muddying this up. A lot of my bills, like my T-Mobile, electric, all that, actually are going to the credit card. So I actually only have like 2 bills a month. Mm-hmm. And there are actually credit cards, because everything goes to that and then I pay the credit card. But I don't know what the amount's going to be, because it's all together.
So,
yeah.
So if, again, for those who we have suggested do not use credit cards, then you're going to, and that's not going to work for you. So then you'd want to use a bank and like a savings account or a checking account. You can certainly use like a Visa or MasterCard debit card to pay those bills. If you want to pay them online or automatically, just make sure the money is there. Another good plan is when you get paid, and you're going to want to pay things in what you've already prioritized in your budget that should get paid first. So you want to give priority like shelter, including your essential utilities, food, clothing, transportation, and then spread the rest across other expenses, and which sounds kind of like what you're doing. If your check doesn't cover everything, that's okay. Just pay what you can. Again, making sure your priorities are covered first, and then pick up where you left off on the next check. So depending on where you are in the month, you might say, oh, I need to pay the rent first. Other than that, there are due dates for our bills, but usually you have a window of 3 to 4 weeks to pay things. So you can kind of shuffle it around in the month within those dates and still make your due date. If you end up with more money than expenses on any given month, then you're going to want to save it for a dry month or tackle whichever baby step you're on if you're still working on baby steps. But again, if you have more, that doesn't mean, oh, you can treat yourself to a bonus this month. You need to plan ahead for when you're going to have a valley in your income.
You know why, and I don't recommend this to everybody, but the reason why I do what I do with the bills, like T-Mobile and stuff, goes to the credit card and not directly linked to my bank account. I'm paranoid about hacker security stuff. I don't like linking things to my bank account.
Yeah.
So I'm putting a little barrier between the people outside and where the money is at, and where I have to manually then move it at that point. Does that make any sense?
It does, but I don't know if you're aware, but both Visa and MasterCard give you the same protections on their debit cards now.
Oh, so I realize that. I just don't use debit cards either.
Yeah. Okay. So most people use debit cards.
Right. Yeah. I don't have I don't have an ATM card either.
Yeah. Well, obviously.
Yeah. No, I don't have ATM cards, debit cards. I only have two credit cards.
You have a checking account though, right?
Oh, absolutely. And a savings account. Yeah, so
the bank will absolutely send you a check card.
Oh, no. Like I said, I told them I don't want one.
Yeah, exactly. So I'm just saying, like, that is a personal Craig choice. It's not as if the banks aren't giving him a different plan.
I told this in an episode a long time ago that
yes,
in the 80s when that it was so accessible to get money at the ATM. And I guarantee there's a lot of people. I watch people at ATMs. There's a lot of people using them. People, when you have that easy of access to cash or using your credit card, you know, I just remember that pain of I would never had money. So once the machine ate it, I never wanted one again. So, but I'm much different now. Obviously, that's way long ago. I just never bothered with because the way I do my security and passwords and hardware keys, I just, it for me, I know more about what's going on in the underworld. And so I just do certain things to protect what I have because I've worked so hard to build up what I have. I don't want to lose it. So.
So how do you budget? Because I think you're probably
I'm
closer
pretty
to
paranoid.
This with your, okay, back to the budgeting.
Yes.
Because you said you do have a budget. You're not just like willy-nilly having your bills paid on your credit card, right?
No. I know what. I know what it's going to be every month.
Yeah. So you're closer to this because you have a more variable income. So maybe you could share how you do your budgeting.
So my budgeting, I know my cell phone is exactly the same every month. My electric bill is variable, but I know what the highest amount is. Mm-hmm. But with my computerized AI thermostats, it has dropped dramatically ever since I've had that. So water is pretty steady. All my utilities are steady. I know what those are. I don't have any car payments. The credit card is basically fuel, some food, and I know how much I'm going to spend on that. It's very little, actually. I do have budget buckets, but my income is what's very variable. I have a steady retirement check that comes in. Then I work these two additional jobs on top of that. And that has more or less caused more tax issues than income budget issues, if that makes sense.
Yeah, yeah.
It throws me into a higher tax bracket, which I did not anticipate or think about. And now I have to budget more tax with withholdings on my incomes because I know the tax bill at the end of the year is going to be much higher.
Right.
So that's been my only issue.
Do you still do a zero sum budget then?
Absolutely. Yeah. And it actually, the more you make and the less you have going out, it's amazing how much extra to make it zero. You just keep dumping it somewhere else.
Right.
I have to put it in savings or send it over to an investment account where I can buy more ETFs or something like, or fund another ETF or buy a stock or do something with it. Cause I don't do the investment properties like you do. So.
Not yet.
No. Right. Yeah. Right now I'm doing so well with the electronic trading and saving and just funding my index funds that I've got going.
All right. Well, that's all I've got on variable budgeting, but I'd love to hear more from others who actually have experience with that type of budgeting.
I do know what my minimum amount is for my lowest month. And that's what I do budget, really like you've talked about before. And that's the big point I think you're getting across.
It is. Yeah. So that's what you should base your budget off of is your lowest point, because anything above that is like gravy and a bonus. But the lowest point, and I guess it's also important to know what your highest point was, because then you know, like that's the max you're going to reach. So it would be completely unrealistic for you to budget expenses that are going to exceed that or even the average of the two.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay.
Yeah. So if it were me, I would take the lowest and I would take a 12-month average and figure out what that is. And then that would be my maximum to budget at any given time. But I would probably take 10% off of that maximum just for a cushion.
Love that.
And then you save. You put money away for the drier months. And then when you get to that point, then you have money that's saved there ready for you to use. But I like the idea of paying yourself a salary out of your savings account.
I like that one. I do.
Yeah.
All right. Well, thank you very much, Amanda. And as always, a quick reminder, check out our website, rockonthemoney.com. We have show notes. All the podcasts are located right there. The website turns into a player. You can play it right on your phone. Plus, there's links there so you can subscribe to the podcast on your favorite platforms, including Apple, Google, Stitcher, Spotify, and TuneIn. And if you could leave us a review and some star ratings on those platforms, it really, really helps us out a lot. Check out our Facebook group community with over 3,000 people in there. Facebook.com/groups/your401k. And also check out our Facebook page at Rock on the Money. So long, everybody. We really, really do have a lot of gratitude for you listening, sharing, and spreading the word. You guys are great. Amanda and I cannot emphasize how much we appreciate you guys. So long, and we'll see you again next week. Until next time, America. America's Rockland, USA. All opinions expressed by the host are solely their own and do not reflect the views of any company, affiliates, or advertisers. Investments or strategies mentioned in the show may not be suitable for you. Before acting on any information in the show, you should consider whether it is suitable for your particular circumstances and strongly consider seeking advice from your own financial or investment advisor.